As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Late night. Midnight on the interstate, and I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to a very special edition of Straight from the Source, a midsummer or late summer edition. Actually, I think this podcast is coming out on Monday, so exactly 1 month before the first day of training camp. Joe Smith and Michael Russo coming to you from downtown Minneapolis, straight from the source. And we haven't talked to you in a while, so we figured we'd check in because it's just been just a hectic summer with tons of news and headlines, just like covering the Tampa Bay Lightning, Joe.
It is. And then, you know, a lot of drama, you know, trade requests and, you know, teams getting blown up. No, it's obviously, it's a great way to enjoy my first summer here in Minnesota. Get a chance to see what everybody's talking about and how beautiful it is, which it really is. Appreciate it. My wife and I. One of the questions for the podcast was how we enjoying our summer. We are enjoying it a lot, but it is a different one. We're in a lot of crazy news on the Wild front. The biggest trade, I think, was bringing Pat Maroon into the fold, and
the only trade,
and most of the news was kind of expected news, right, Mike? Of signing their own free agents.
Yeah, exactly. Philip Gustafson gets the 3-year deal. Took a little longer than expected, and he got more money than I think that anybody really expected heading into certainly last season, but even this offseason. And as we saw in some of the arbitration cases and some of the re-signings, the market rose for those type of players, and he was in a great position. He waited till, you know, the way it works is that you actually, I didn't realize this, is that you sort of, to get your arb date, you negotiate that too. And he got the last of the goalies. And man, did that work out for him, because the market was established with Samsonov and he got a little bit more than that.
Now, not a lot of goalies go to arbitration hearings, so there wasn't a lot of recent comps that you could. And Gustafson's a unique situation, right? He's not a huge body of work, had a really, really impressive year with the Wild and breakout season, so to speak. But he didn't have a lot of time under his belt. So you had to wonder, like, I'm sure that's where the Wild were like, we don't want to probably give mega money and mega years. And good to Kurt Overhart for saying, hey, like, want to break the bank as much as we can and take advantage of a really successful season, and knowing how important Philip Gustafson is going to be to the Wild for at least this coming year. And who knows, Mike, you know, this is putting them in a really good position of having a potential number one goalie under contract for 3 years at a pretty affordable 3.75, I think it is, annual value. and giving their goalie potentially of the future, we've always thought, Jesper Wallstedt, some time to not have to rush him from AHL Iowa. So I think that's kind of the best of both worlds, in my opinion, of signing him. Maybe a little more than you want to in the front end, but you're still buying out a UFA there year two and not have to worry about this whole saga next summer.
Yep, he gets a quarter of a million more than Marc-Andre Fleury. But Bill Guerin made it clear on his conference call with you guys or his Zoom. Conference calls the old conference calls. So 2015, 2018 on a Zoom with you guys, in his opinion, you know, Flower is still going to push Gus and that there's no true number one. I think that we expect both you and me that Gus is going to get the majority of starts if he plays well. But I do think that the goal is to keep him fresh going into the playoffs.
It is. And I think part of it's when I asked the question, I was like, you know, Fleury told us at the end of the year, like he's asked, like, are you okay if it ends up working out where you're the backup? And he said, of course, Marc-Andre Fleury, to his credit, will say yes. And he's the ultimate team player. But I think Bill Guerin kind of laughed knowing how competitive Fleury is and how he's not just going to give Gustafsson the net, right? This might be his last year in the NHL. And so I think it's good to have Fleury, if he's at his best, pushing Gustafsson, who still has, I think, some things to prove in his career, as he admitted himself in his own conference call or Zoom, that, hey, the next 3 years will say a lot about my career and what I'm going to be, what I'm going to turn into, to where after that contract, he'll get a long-term deal, in theory, with the Wild or somewhere else.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to Sweden on Sunday for an NHL event where I'm going to get a bunch of NHL players, Europeans, guys like Rantanen and Heiskanen and Lindholm and Pettersson and people like that. But I'm actually going to sit down with Philip Gustafsson on Wednesday. Tuesday, I'm actually going up to Karlstad, Sweden, to sit down with Joel Eriksson Ek. So stay tuned to those stories as we get closer to training camp. But I'm looking forward to sitting down with Gus and sort of hearing how his summer has gone beyond just obviously the re-signing. Because this is, I mean, you know, as he said to you too on the Zoom, this is not him just going to pass over the baton to Jesper Wallstedt in 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. He expects that in 2 or 3 years, he's the established number one on the team, and then the organization will have a big decision on his hands.
No, and that's what you want any goalie or what competitor to say, right? This is going to be my net. He worked his butt off to get the net this year and earn the start in the playoffs, which we thought should have been all 6 starts, but ended up being 5 starts in the first round playoff series. But yeah, like they talked to him before last year of make sure you're in the right condition and in shape. And so I'm really curious how he looks and going into camp and if he kind of put his money where his mouth is and says, hey, I'm going to be the number one goalie here. And it's his chance to take the kind of the baton and go with it. So I think he wants to be that guy. And whether it ends up being here or they have a decision to make from the Wild perspective of which one do they keep. If Wallstedt turns into the guy that they think he's capable of being, they'll have 2 quality number one franchise goalie, which most teams in the league would be envious of.
Brandon Duhaime gets the 1 year, $1.1 million deal, takes him right to UFA next summer. So now the Wild have a number of UFAs, pending potential UFAs next summer in Zuccarello, Foligno, Hartman, and Maroon, along with Duhaime and obviously Alex Goligoski, who this could be it, his swan song, and then Marc-Andre Fleury, same thing with him. And then they make the trade for Pat Maroon. Pretty interesting deal because, again, he gets the 800, what, he's got 800 left on his deal with the Tampa Bay retaining a little bit. But the Wild had the opportunity to go give 800 to maybe Blake Wheeler, but they chose this route, which was, I thought, interesting. And now what that does is it really puts the screws to maybe a guy like Kalen Addison. That's why he's not signed right now. They've got to keep that as low as possible so they could potentially have a 13th forward on this team at some point. So there are going to be times where they are going to carry the minimum, but you know, with 7D. But man, I mean, they do not have a lot of room to spare.
They don't. And like the last piece of the puzzle is Kalen Addison, and the Wild do intend to sign him. They want to sign him. The qualifying offer was just under 800 grand, I believe. And I'm sure that Kalen Addison does not want to just sign that right away, which is why it might take a little while longer.
Yeah. Well, he is not signing that. I could tell you that he's not signing that QO. So
the idea is, the Wild only have a little over $1 million in cap space. They want to give some wiggle room as much as they can, so they have some flexibility in season for call-ups and accumulating cap space like they did last year for the trade deadline. So that'll be the last kind of mark in their offseason is him. Mike, were you surprised at all that none of the guys that they acquired at the deadline are here going into next year? Do you kind of have an idea that those guys weren't going to be coming back.
All the UFAs?
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, Ryan Reeves was the one that Bill wanted to bring back, but he obviously got big money from Toronto and mostly term. That was, I think, the big thing. The interesting part about the qualifying offer is that I do think it expires July 15th. So even if, like, now it's a negotiating thing and the Wild aren't getting him at 787 anymore anyway, because I think the league minimum is 850. I could be talking out of my ass here. But either way, with back to Addison, you know, there's not much negotiating that can go on here. Like, they have $1.6 million. You know, you give him $1 million and you can't afford a 13th forward on this team. So it is, the Wild have a lot. You know, it's going to be just interesting. Like, if they have no injuries in camp, you know, it's going to be basically Terry versus Rossi for the final spot, and they're going to probably have to keep 12 forwards, right?
Assuming they only keep 12, right?
Yeah. You know, but again, I don't know how, if Addison gets more than 800, which he's gonna, they can't afford even a Lettieri, right?
Yeah, and I think Lettieri didn't send the deal with the intent of going to Iowa, so I think he's intending on making the team or being part of it, which I give him credit for, and he has some experience there, but... You know, the Wild kind of put themselves in a situation by obviously bringing back Duhaime, which they wanted to do, and bringing back Pat Maroon, who Bill Guerin said is an everyday NHL player now. Mm-hmm. There are not many spots to, unless there's some injuries there, to put guys in. So I think overall the roster is pretty much set. You know, the idea, Kaylee Addison, who spent this summer in Minnesota and has been working out with the guys at TRIA, another interesting situation. You know, do you work out without a contract? You know, do you put yourself in a situation of getting hurt and that kind of thing? But he's been around all summer, so we'll see how he looks in camp. I'm sure he'll be one of the more determined players that you'll see in camp, or you hope that that's the case, because they have a role for him to fill, and there's a need for somebody to fill that power play spot. And when he was at his best, when he was on his game, like, he was a very valuable member of that blue line. People forget that early last season. So that'll be one of the big stories I think we'll be watching as training camp starts.
And that is, to me, why at the end of this little squabble, you can call it, that I think Kalen's just going to have to say, just sign me to his agents. Let's get it done. Bet on himself and have a big year. Because, you know, you and I have talked to Dean. Dean expects that Kalen's going to be a big part of this team, Q being the power play, being a mainstay on that third pair. And we know with Goligoski and Merrill, I mean, Addison should get a lot of playing time. And I think, contrary to a lot of people's opinion, Dean actually likes Kalen Addison a lot. But defensively last year, he left a lot to be desired. The Wild coaches are going to have to coach this kid up. But if he can improve defensively, his offensive skills is something the Wild do not have on that number one power play on the back end.
They don't. And then you saw they needed a little bit more of that in the playoffs. I mean, Klingberg was the ideal choice, they thought, to come in and maybe boost that power play. I guess you can argue that if people call Kalen Addison a specialist, it isn't Klingberg a specialist as well. That's a pretty fair question to have. But now this is the younger version. It's Kalen Addison. This is a prove it year probably for him. Let's sign a 1 year deal with him and then see what he shows next year and go from there. But as far as that's concerned, there are not really many camp battles other than that, you know, Merrill and Goligoski maybe battling for that 6D or 5D spot on the third pairing. But the one question I think we'll probably get to, and probably a million questions about that, is Marco Rossi, because he's been around working out all summer too and trying to get into shape and get prepared for this big year. But the question will be, what will his role be? I think we all believe, and I think Dean's believes he'll make the team coming out of camp, but what role is best for him and what role will he earn going into the season?
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, right now, I think they have him penciled in to play on that third line with Freddie Goudreau, Marcus Foligno, Eric Sinek, with Johansson and Boldy, which when they were healthy last year, that was a really good line. And Hartman starting off with Zuccarello and Kaprizov. You were listening to Billy Guerin on The Fan the other day when he was on with Barrero, and somebody posed the question, maybe it was Dan that posed the question, by the way, our editor is calling me right now. Yeah. He's back in the country. You know, why don't you give him a look initially with Kaprizov and Zuccarello? We saw it once in the last preseason game last year, and he scored a goal, if I remember correctly, in that preseason game on a pass from Zuccarello from behind the net. Why don't you think that they want to at least just, I know they don't ever want to anoint somebody, but, you know, look, Sam Steele played with Kaprizov and Zuccarello last year. You cannot tell me that Marco Rossi, you know, doesn't at least warrant a look there.
he certainly has the pedigree, right? A top 10 pick. And if you pick a guy like that in the top 10, you envision him as a top six center, I would imagine. And I think when Garen was posed that question on KFan, that live forum with fans, you know, he said, if you're not me or Dean Evason, it might make sense to ask that question a lot. But he's like, what happens if he's not ready yet? What happens when Matt Zuccarello and Kaprizov come into your office and say, hey, this kid's not there yet? And he said the word confidence a bunch of times in that answer, which was interesting because a lot of times they talked about that last year. The reason why they wanted to send him back to Iowa was, oh, rebuild his confidence or get him some touches or make him, because he didn't have no goals in his first 16 NHL games. So I think they were kind of worried about that. Of what if it doesn't work, or what that does for him? Does it set it back? And so I don't know if that's the right necessarily mindset to have. Maybe it's good or bad, but clearly want to put him in a position to succeed, a soft landing spot to get his first NHL goal, to get some points, maybe to get some of that mojo that he showed clearly in Iowa last year. But yeah, I think there's a point where, you know, you got to see what you have, right? This is not his last go around. He's still a young kid. You don't want to say this is his last show me situation, but it'd be curious, at least in preseason, to see, hey, how does he fit with these guys? Can he play those minutes? Has this summer been such a big boon for him where he can turn into that guy? But clearly, if you draft a guy top 10 and Judd and those guys are really bullish on this kid, you know, he's going to be a top six guy if everything works out well for you in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, you asked the kid to not go home to Austria pretty much all summer. He abided by that, has worked out wholeheartedly, skated with NHL players galore, and, you know, with Andy Ness, working with Matt Harder, it just seems at some point you have to give him the opportunity. This team will be better if Marco Rossi becomes Marco Rossi that they thought they were drafting. And, you know, I think that it behooves them to at least give them that real opportunity there. And then, you know, if it works, that's a great third line. If you have Hartman or Goudreau centering Hartman or Goudreau and Foligno, I mean, that's a great third line.
I think this gets into what we'll talk about soon is the story we wrote a few weeks back, projecting the roster after the buyouts are cap hits are over, and the whole idea that they can do this big spending spree and get a number one center. These number one centers are available. I think the best case scenario for the Wild is one of their own guys like Rossi is able to be that top six guy where they don't have to go out and look for who might not be out there in free agency. And if you have that depth in your lineup where you have a guy like him with X going to be entrenched in there, you have Goudreau locked up for a while. Hartman, we won't know until after this year. Maybe they can re-sign him on a bargain deal right now. But the best case scenario is him and their prospects stepping in versus we looked at the guys that were on the, you know, UFAs in a couple of years. There's no slam dunk. There's going to be some major July 1 signing by Bill Guerin that's going to be satisfying to the fan base.
Yeah. Let's talk about that story. You and I took a little flack from our loyal fan base on the Athletic comment board, which I usually don't read until you told me to take a look at it. And people saying it was a disappointing article and too many what ifs and you know, show some creativity. Let's say none of the youngsters pan out. Who's going to be on this team? Like, we're not, you know, wewelovethewild.com. We're not Bleacher Report. We're not a blog. We're a news organization. It is foolish to say that none of these kids are going to be part of that future. And even if they are not quite ready, you can't just go sign a five-year deal to a guy if all of a sudden who's on the NFL in Europe for a year away anyway. The goal for this team, for slow playing all these youngsters, is for them to be the people that are anointed to these spots. And then if they become the players that they thought they were drafted, you have to save money for them. Not to mention, Kaprizov is going to name his price. And the Wild are going to have to give it to him if they want to keep him. And that price could be $13, $14 million. Who knows? I don't really understand what the fans expected here in terms of making this a fantasy world. If you want us to sit there and say, all right, Dreisaitl's on this team and Victor Hedman's on this team, we can make and throw shit against the wall. But that's just not reality. The hope is that, you know, Damon Hunt is on this team and Jesper Wallstedt is on this team, who's going to cost a lot of money at some point. And, you know, the Hunter Hayes and the Ryan O'Rourke's and obviously the Huzandinas, the Ogrins, Urofs.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the whole idea of this story, and I feel bad to get rope Mike into this story since I know not a big fan of projection or speculation, which I don't think this is really speculation. It's more of an educated, reported idea. And I'm sure the Wild have their own boards of what it might look like in a couple of years, too. You have to play it out and say, okay, well, these are the guys that could be ready by then. These are the guys that they have under contract that will need new contracts by then. Brock Faber, Marco Rossi, the year off and Ogren's potentially might need the contracts by then. We don't know what will happen with Hartman and Zuccarello. Potentially Foligno could be re-signed, I think. That he'll be might be around still by then. But I didn't want to just throw stuff at the wall and say, oh, they'll trade for Braden Point, who will waive his no-trade clause in Tampa to come be that number one center that the Wild should have had when they should have drafted him 6 years ago or whatever. You know, we wanted to.
I love how you always have to subtly remind Wild fans that they dropped a spot to take Louis Belpedio.
Well, you know, like Garrett mentioned a lot. He's like, we look a lot at Tampa, and it wasn't just the Hedman and Samkoses. It was Sorelli and Point in the third round. It was Nikita Kucherov, number 56, number 57 overall. Like, those guys were built from within. Of course, those were big jackpot kind of picks, but the whole idea is if you draft well, those guys can be those guys at entry level contracts that could be fuel your championship team. So the idea of that story was to kind of give people kind of a template of what the team could look like then, what kind of holes might be on their roster, and just frankly, like what UFAs might be available at that time. And you look at the list, ours isn't very inspiring. Now things could change, or you guys could get bought out. There could be some RFAs that they might be able to trade for. And if these prospects turn out, Mike, they'll not just be guys on their roster. They could be valuable trade chips. And those are how those teams are built.
Yeah, exactly. And Bill Guerin mentions it. It is, I think, the most interesting thing is that article that I wrote when Bill Guerin, they officially named him president of hockey ops, is, you know, I talked to Leopold and Guerin for it, and they actually contradict each other. I mean, Leopold basically wants them to go get the shiny new toy like the fans do. And Bill Guerin's the one that's taking the even point of view here, that just reminding people, well, wait a minute, if Wallstedt, Huzanginov, Yurov, Ogren are studs, they can't just go out and throw a bunch of money at an ancient John Tavares or something like that, or, you know, Sidney Crosby.
Or Brock Nelson, Sidney Crosby. Like, you know, there aren't many centers or number one centers that are going to be out there that are going to be under 38 years old, you know?
Yeah.
So unless you can pry Connor Bedard from the Blackhawks or something like that, you'll be
I mean, like this comment right here. I love the idea of this article, but it showed no imagination or creativity. You should have thrown a wrench into this and assumed that none of the prospects are going to materialize. We're trying to be realistic here. And the reality is that nobody knows what this team is going to look like in 3 years, and we have to see what these kids look like when they come over here. And we will see. But if they go out and make a mistake with a bunch of money, they're going to have to trade some of these kids that they're going to not be able to afford. And that is just like, I get fans are fed up and impatient and tired of the constant not getting past the first round thing. But they have a plan here, and they're trying to abide by that. Now, it doesn't mean that Bill Guerin doesn't have a list of players on his wall that could potentially be available in those years. But to just sit there and, like, you know, say Leon Draisaitl is going to be the number one center of the Wild in 25-26 makes zero sense. I feel bad because this was your story idea, and I basically told you, I'm like, this is, you know, this was not what I wanted to do if we were going to just throw out a bunch of names and make stuff up. And, you know, we've talked about it, and this is no shot at them, but, you know, if you want that type of story, go read the Flyers story that has Kaprizov on the Flyers in 25-26. And I guarantee if all the fans read that here, that they would be trashing that writer on the comment board.
But he was being creative, and he was being imaginative, right?
Exactly.
And then you get on both sides of the coin, you know, like you... You know, that would have been something if we wouldn't have put Kaprizov on this 25-26 team. How much that would have been imagination.
That's what we should have done. We should have been really creative and said that Kaprizov's not going to re-sign here, and who's going to replace him. That would have really made, that should would have shown a lot of imagination. Maybe not too much either.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Anything else that we should talk about coming up here? I mean, well, obviously, training camp starts the 21st. 15th, I think, is the Tom Kerver showcase with the Blues and the Blackhawks. Right now, it's, you know, the Wild have not been given any indication that Bedard is not coming. It would surprise me if he's coming, but right now, the Wild are under the impression
he is coming.
That
could be one heck of a Patria place there with Blues, Blackhawks fans already coming, but then... Yeah. If Connor Bedard's his first game is in a Blackhawk uniform, that'll be something that, I mean, everybody's going to want to see.
Yeah. I mentioned I'm going to Sweden. Joe's going up to Brainerd, kind of the same place. And you're going to be following around Matt Boldy in that golf tournament. Then Joe's going on a reunion of his honeymoon, which is pretty cool, to Hawaii. I'll be out in Chicago for the GMs, and for the first time ever, head coaches are going to be part of that meeting in early September. Then I go out to Vegas for the NHL, I'm going for Stockholm for the European, we call it the car wash in the sports writing industry, because basically the players go from station to station. I'm getting a bunch of European players there, but then I'll go to the actual one in North America in Vegas in September with Pierre LeBrun. And then training camp's right around the corner, and sooner or later the Florida Panthers will be in town for the home opener on October 12th, I think it is, 12th. Just some self-promotion. I'm doing some state fair stuff. August 27th, I'm filling in for, I don't even know whose show it is. Probably, I don't know if it's Burrow's show, but I'm doing 11-1 on that Sunday, the 27th. 29th, I'll be on for an hour with PA, an hour with Common, and then September 4th, Labor Day. I close the fan stuff with the La Russa radio from 12 to 3. I'll be filling in from 12 to 3, but Barrero is doing a special show that day because Craig Kilborn is going to be on there. I'll be on the first hour of Barrero, and then Craig Kilborn comes on there. So again, August 27th, 11 to 1. August 29th, I'll be on the final hour of PA, the second hour of Common, and September 4th, I'm filling in 12 to 3, and on 3 to 4 with the Barrero, and that's all at the fan booth. Joe Smith might be joining me for an hour. Eric Stolhansky, the actor from Super Troopers, Super Troopers 2, Beer Fest, Quasi, Club Dread, everything. Freeloaders, he'll be... I just went to actually Charleston with him to watch Trampled by Turtles. But he'll be coming on from 1 to 2 that day on September 4th at the fan with me. And then Dane Mizutani is probably coming on as well to talk Vikings. And we'll maybe talk a little Wild. But maybe you'll be there with Dane. We can have reunion. That'll be pretty cool. All right, let's go through some Twitter questions. Michael Scott asks, any idea why Addison hasn't signed yet? And I jokingly wrote back, because he wants more money than the Wild want to pay him. That is why players are always on.
That's why Phil Gustavson didn't sign for the first 3 months of their offseason. So,
he didn't take his QO. So basically, I'm reading these in real time too. So I might read them and all of a sudden realize, we don't need to answer this. But let's read this out loud and see what it says. Jake Harlander goes, conspiracy time. Does the league need Arizona? Like, do they need a bottom team that can eat crap contracts, pay people who don't play anymore, and be a retirement spot, holdover spot for players? Is that why they can't just give up on that franchise? It's a fair point, but no, that is not the reason why Arizona is in Arizona. Arizona is in Arizona because it is a top media market, top TV market, and the league wants to be there. In fact, I can promise you this. How about this one for you? If Arizona actually does move to Salt Lake City, in the next round of expansion, one of the expansion teams will be Arizona, and the other one will probably be Atlanta. So I'm telling you, they will never leave. Arizona will have a team eventually. The thing, the contrary to what Jake's point is too, Joe, is this is going to be a good team. First of all,
they're garbage contracts.
They have, obviously, they've always been that landing spot to Jake's point. But I mean, they just signed, they just had a really good summer. They brought Bjugstad back, who was great there. They just signed Dumba on a 1-year deal. They signed Zucker on a 1-year deal. This team could
I think it was.
Yep. This team could be flirting with a playoff spot. We know that they were a pain in the ass for the Wild to deal with last year. And then the other thing is they got so many draft picks and prospects coming. This team is going
to
be good.
They got Logan Cooley decided to come, and he'll be a top six center potentially. Clayton Keller is a star, of course. And the one question was their blue line. And for all the criticism of Matt Dumba when he was in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, he's going to be a top four guy for them, maybe their top pairing defenseman for them. So they did make some interesting moves, and the division will be tougher to play against. I guarantee you, anytime anybody who plays in that building, you've been to that place too, it's a harder team to win there. I think overall that they're not going to be all of a sudden a cup contender, but they're no longer going to be just a team that just collects Pavel Datsyuk's contract or whoever's contract that's Brent Seabrook's contract or whoever else might need that landing spot. Though there would be love, I think every GM in the league would love to have a landing spot for those kind of contracts. I think they're going to be good. And I don't know if we touched on Matt Dumba yet, did we, Mike?
No.
Just on him getting a chance to, I think, you know, show what he can do in a year, and maybe he'll get traded at the deadline to a contender, depending on what his no trade clause is. And then I think most UFAs wanted a long-term deal. He wanted a long-term deal, but I think this was the best situation of both, where he has a place out in the Scottsdale area. He can play a top four role. He can, you know, reshow his value. And then if they're a playoff team, he stays. If not, then they can be a guy that they can move at the deadline for some pieces too.
I think that I would love to know though, why it is always so hard for the, it is insane to me that it's so hard for him to get a job. 1 year at 3.9 makes no sense.
Klingberg got 1 year at 4.
It's fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think there's some underlying reasons for that. You know, I have my suspicions why, but I think it's absolutely insane to me that this is going on. But I think what this should do is solidify in the minds of Wild fans that he was untradeable the last 4 or 5 years. He was untradeable. They didn't choose to keep Matt Dumba to trade away Kevin Fiala. It was never happening. He had no value around the league.
There were no calls to deadline this year. There were nobody.
None. And Billy could paint it whatever they want, that we, you know, we've made it known that we were keeping Matt Dumba. They were keeping Matt Dumba because he was untradeable. And he was untradeable before the expansion drafts, and he was it's just, I don't know why. I don't get it. Again, I have my suspicions, but I'm telling you that the narrative that they chose to keep Matt Dumba, and that's why they got rid of Kevin Fiala, is ridiculous. And I used to think it was just because he was overpaid at $6 million, but clearly he couldn't even get a job at half the price this year. I mean, you know, basically nobody was going after him, and he waited and waited for the Carlson thing to take care of himself, to maybe go to Carolina or go to Pittsburgh or go to San Jose. And clearly the second that we always have been alluding to on all the podcasts I'm doing, that they had this contract in the drawer in Arizona. And the second that Erik Karlsson was traded to Pittsburgh, he signed the 1-year deal with Arizona, because I think it was, he knew he was no longer going to be able to go to Carolina. San Jose made the deal to get Granlund back, and
got Russo back, and they got a few other
Exactly. And then obviously Pittsburgh had no interest in him. You know, I did hear Toronto went to him and was interested in signing him there. On the Klingberg contract, and I think he turned it down. I don't know if he overplayed his hand, but I just think, you know, to me, Matt Dumba is too good of a player to have such struggles to get a job.
A 29-year-old right shot defenseman who could move the puck, and he has his flaws in his game, like anybody does, of course. And he's not the number one defenseman on.
But he played really well in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do teams look out and overpay for a right shot defenseman or, you know, a puck moving defenseman? Right,
John Klingberg. You know, there you go. Matt Boldy Enjoyer, great Twitter name, asks, what are the odds Rossi actually starts the year in a top six role? On a non-Rossi note, do you think there's a chance Lambos could make his debut sometime in the second half of the year? We just talked about Rossi. I mean, right now, barring injuries, we think that Hartman is penciled in at number one, and we know that they're going to obviously start with the Johansson, Eriksson-Ek, Boldy line, because if you remember before Eriksson-Ek broke his leg in Pittsburgh, that line was on fire.
Terrific.
Just outstanding. And so We know they're starting with that. The question is, the only way that Rossi starts in a number one role is if there's injuries or Hartman just doesn't pan out as number one guy, or he wins that job.
Or Rossi comes out there and says, hey, this is a guy that looks...
Exactly. On the Lambos, you know, it's his first year in the AHL. Very unlikely. They would need a bunch of injuries. I mean, again, their third pair is kind of iffy, I would say. I mean, let's be honest. Their third pair is going to be made up of two of three defensemen that pretty much were scratched a lot down the stretch.
Well, three of them were eventually. Merrill was scratched in like the at some point too.
Yeah. So you know, to your point, but I think Damon Hunt and Dakota Mermis are probably the 1-2 on getting a spot, and they're gonna, you know, for young defensemen, I don't think they're gonna rush him to the NHL.
Yeah, I think Hunt's ahead, but I think they also want to make sure guys, if they're probably gonna play, that would take an injury or two for that to happen, since they already have Goligoski as a seventh defenseman or Merrill seventh defenseman. So it would take a couple injuries for them to like Mermis played last year, end of the year, right? He got a chance to play, but that was under different circumstances. But I think Hunt is leader in the clubhouse now as far as defensive prospect, but Lambos is maybe the higher touted guy. So if he has a great year, then maybe he can be a guy they can use a black ace in the playoffs next year or something like that.
Yeah. CAC hockey, I'm going to throw this at you, but you might not know the answer yet, but super random, but I read Joe's stories about Maroon when he got traded and saw that he and John Cooper started Texarkana, but had some practices in Little Rock, Arkansas, I assume. As a Minnesotan who just moved to Little Rock, there's only been one rink, the Skadium. Curious to know if Pat remembers the rink. Have you talked to him about this?
I haven't talked about it. I could ask him in training camp, but I know he used to play like roller hockey in St. Louis, and then he played Texarkana, Texas, and then they moved to St. Louis Bandits. So he probably played in a bunch of, you know, interesting rinks over the years. I'll have to ask him in tramp and get back to you on that one.
Yeah. Dan asks, do you think with the pressure and expectations, Billy Guerin will be able to hold off if the right player fit isn't available when the money comes, or should we just accept we are going to get the best player we can for the money for the AAV we'll likely regret by the end? And this is no offense, Dan, this is a bit of a word salad here, but I mean, basically it's going back to our question. I mean, I don't think that Bill Guerin feels any pressure. I think that he's going to want to make the best moves that he possibly can when they're out of this cap hell. This season is going to be interesting on how this goes, because I think a lot of teams did get better in the division. Dallas and Colorado are clear 1-2 in my eyes in the division. But Winnipeg got better, and they didn't trade Scheifele or Hellebuyck yet. So they are, to me, better. You know, Arizona is better. St. Louis, we don't know yet. Nashville should be better. Chicago should be better. I don't think they're a playoff team by any stretch, but this is going to be a tough year for the Wild. But yet, Billy, at his end of the year presser, kind of painted the expectation that the next 2 years is going to be hard. So how disappointing can you be if this team takes a little bit of a turn for worse?
Like, is a 100 point season going to be disappointment to Wild fans? Like, what if we have 9,802 points and be the third spot in the division or the one of the wild card spots? Is that a disappointment? You know, I think the big disappointment comes if they make the playoffs and they lose in the first round again, which, who knows, if they get to Dallas in the first round, then, you know, we can see how that could play out. But yeah, I mean, there's a chance that they could take a little step back. I mean, look at last year. Like, they had took a 15 game point streak for them to get in really serious, great playoff position and down the stretch. And so a lot of things have to go right.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hamponi goes, with the length of the season plus the offseason, how do you continue to find new stories to write? How do you keep it fresh doing gamers? I'm very thankful that you're always able to do that. Well, thank you very much. I don't know. I haven't written a ton this offseason on the Wild. I've written a ton on other things. You've been more the Wild guy this offseason. But this has been a hard offseason to find fresh stuff to write. I mean, there's nothing going on with this team right now. Yeah. Literally nothing. And so it is hard, unless we're just going to invent stories. And apparently, when we invent stories, the fans don't exactly love it because it shows no imagination or creativity. Have
a smart fan base here, right? You're not going to sort of throw something dumb out there just to like filler, right? We want to write stories that matter, that are interesting, that it could cause debate. And this was a tough, because offseason started May 1st. That's just the truth, right? There wasn't playoffs to cover here, and there weren't any cap space to make big moves. So you can do like a big free agency primer, right? Our free agency was what, Vinny Letteri signing, mm-hmm. And seeing Matt Dumbo might leave somewhere, which he didn't leave for 2 more months after that. So I think I wrote like 4 or 5, 6 Gustafson stories trying to preview what the contract could look like in arbitration. And, there's stuff that you can do in the offseason as far as player interests, which we have done and will do going forward. But it can be more of a challenge in the offseason than it is during the season, because you have more access, you have more small talk with players, and you have a chance to kind of stretch yourself a little bit there. For the summertime, guys kind of go into hiding a little bit, and it's a little harder to do that. And we don't want to make things up. We don't want to do a filler story. We'll do mailbags, answer questions you have on top of your mind. But for a summer, they have no cap space and no moves other than signing their own RFAs, and no one aside from Gustafson was going to be the big, headline grabber. Just one of those deals. Maybe next season will be crazier.
Yeah, and very likely would be, especially with the number of UFAs they possibly could have. I mean, we'll see. Right now, they haven't begun talking extension with Hartman, Foligno, or Zuccarello, but, there's possible that all those guys could leave. Mm-hmm. And then by Grant, just, that alone, it's going to make it a much more interesting offseason. We'll probably have to be on our toes a little bit more. In terms of keeping gamers fresh and things like that, I mean, this could be an exciting team at times, especially covering Kaprizov. So that helps. We have a lot of good talkers in the room and things like that. And then the other thing is Twitter is valuable. And a lot of times just seeing what the fans are talking about gives us ideas for what to write. In fact, tell me what you want to hear from Eric Sinek and Gustafson for my sit downs next week. And I'll be sure to ask them for that. CKGB, Hotel Putingrad is the name of the Twitter name, and the avatar is,
oh boy,
is Putin on it looks like a Detroit Lions logo. So
two very different things. I grew up a Lions guy myself, so this is going to be an interesting question. Go ahead.
But over under on Marco Rossi hitting 40 points at the big club this season, I think probably I would go under if he's on the third line, over if he's on the first line. I would think that Rossi's going to get power play time on the second unit. Mm-hmm. But as we know, that first unit was so good at times last year that the second unit didn't get a lot of power play time. And then when they did, it was mop up time mm-hmm. on the power play. In fact, it was like half a season mm-hmm. before they scored their first goal. I remember that second unit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the under is out of the question. Not a slam at Marco Rossi. It depends on what his role is, right? How many minutes he plays, right? Like, didn't he have, how many points did he have in his first 17 NHL mm-hmm. games, right? I think one or two.
Yeah, one assist. And
I think that's where it's interesting, because that people tie that a lot to his value and his confidence, right? And so it'll be very important to see. I think they like to see him productive, because that'll do much for his confidence, for expectations, for fans, for media covering him. So it won't be like going through a first 12-game goal drought to start the season. I wonder what that'll be like if that happens. So I think just to him get that monkey off his back and get some goals, get a few. Doesn't have to score 30 goals for him to be successful this season. I think if he's, 12 to 13, 14 goal scorer, if he's that in 40, 50 points and he plays consistent role and he plays well in his own end, like, you got to build somewhere, right? Braden Point didn't start by scoring 50 goals in his first year. So you need some time to work and develop. And as long as he keeps that confidence, then I think they'll be happy.
Yeah, you know that the Wild could have drafted Braden Point. I'm just letting you know.
I was there.
Yeah. Nate wants to know, any chance that Bally's is not the Wild streaming partner this year, or TV partner? The way it's working is that, one issue, besides the fact that Diamond is in bankruptcy and trying to restructure, is they're also trying to renegotiate their deals with Comcast and I think DirecTV, and that is not done yet. And that's, can you imagine if they can't get that done? I mean, where would you even watch Bally Sports North if it's not on Comcast? I mean, that's the only reason why some people have cable in this area. So that's a problem right now. So the league the other day in bankruptcy court went there and basically said they need to have a time, I think like September 30th, where they need to know exactly what the plan is here. And if not, they need to get emergency relief from them and come up with contingency plans. So right now, the Wild are expecting that they will be on Bally Sports North this year. You know, the first quarter payments were all due on August 1st. As far as I know, the Wild probably got that payment because we haven't heard boo about it. To think that behind the scenes that both the Wild and the NHL, as well as the 12 or 14 other clubs that are on Diamond Sports or Bally's regionals right now aren't coming up with contingency plans, to think that that is not the case, it'd be foolish. So it wouldn't shock me if the Wild behind the scenes are trying to figure out a way, and it's a huge cost to have some games over the air, some games, many games that might have to be streamed on wild.com or something like that for its subscription price probably. I think that that is probably going on, but right now they are expecting that they're going to be on Bally Sports North. But this is an issue that just seems to be never ending.
A huge one around the league. And then I think the Wild are like a number of teams who, like you said, they're working their way to be able to distribute their own games. It could be like the, you know, the Yes Network and the Yankees, right? They could have their own version of that. The answer to the question is there will be televised Wild games. It'll just be a matter of what platform it'll be on. It'll start on Bally's, and then I think they hope that's the way it goes. But then, you know, I think teams like them, the Lightning, I think Nashville is part. I mean, there's several teams that are in that Bally's envelope who will be making contingency plans because, you know, leagues, you know, having hard enough struggle it is to get new fans and to raise their audience. They can't afford to not be visible and easily accessible to fans locally.
Lizard to Kaprizov, Minnesota Hockey Man 336 on Twitter asks, NHL Network just rated Kirill Kaprizov as the 7th best wing. How would you two rank him? Points-wise, he had a down year, but that was solely due to injury. Still averaged more than one power play goal and had 40 goals with no top-line center. You know, to the fans' point, he would have been a 100-point guy and a 40-plus goal guy, you know, big time if he was not hurt there in Winnipeg. You know, top 7 winger in the league.
Is it left or right wing, or what, did they say by position, or is it is only by winger?
He wrote wing. I don't remember. I got the email from the NHL network on it, but I didn't.
Really. That's everybody. That's like, you know, Kucherov. That's Tkachuk, right? That's trying to think of like where he'd be. It feels seven feels
high to me.
Feels high to me because I consider him a top 10 player in the world, like flat out. You know, so. It'd be hard for me to say the 7th best left winger, right? You know, I think, you know, he's establishing himself as one of those guys in the league. So I think 7 might seem, until I see the list of names that they have before him, it seems like it's pretty low on that list.
William Dennison asks, it seems as if the Wild have a troubling relationship with the officials and reputation as a team of complainers. Do you think this can get cleaned up? Or since the refs are mostly the same every year, the damage is done? I thought Pete DeBoer exploited this in the playoffs, Williams says. I do think that if I had to guess, and this will be a subject in training camp, that Dean has probably looked in the mirror and said to himself, I probably need to calm down a bit. Because also I think that sometimes the players take on the personality of the coach. And and to Williams' point, that became a problem this year. And so I do think that he's going to try his best to chillax a little bit back there. I think a lot of times that he loses his mind on the bench, it's extremely justified. I thought the Marcus Foligno penalties in the playoffs were a joke. The knee-on-knee in the pivotal game in Dallas was a total miscall by two veteran refs, I believe Steve Kazari and Chris Lee. Then the call on Middleton by Steve Kazari was an absolute freaking joke on saving. You know, and this is the type of stuff that drives you crazy as a coach, but you know, the concern that I have is William's point that is the damage done. It's the same refs. These guys have MOs. It's like I kind of joked with Jake, I told Jake Middleton when he was talking about his relationship with the one ref that seems to call him a lot on our podcast a couple weeks ago. And if people didn't hear that, that's on our worst seats in the house. Joe filled in for LaPanta, and Jake was our guest for an hour plus at Elsie's. And he was talking about a relationship problem that he has with one specific referee who I know who that ref is. And I said to him, you know, at some point you just need to go up to the ref and say, look, clearly the story, the anecdote that happened between him and Foligno when they were on opposite teams in San Jose that this ref overheard and got upset about has offended this referee if you really think that it's become a personal thing. But you need to just go up to him and say, look, I'm a good guy. You're a good guy. Let's start over here. Do not hold this against me the rest of my career. It's not fair. And he said he's tried to do that. And if that's the case and the ref has still holding it against him, that's a problem. And so this is something that I do think the league, the Wild are going to have to sit there and work on.
And also, you know, it starts with how you play, right? I mean, you can't tell Marcus Foligno to not be heavy, hard to play against and finish his checks. You can still finish your checks and not get a penalty call and some of the questionable things. So I think it's staying away from some of this, the riffraff, like the stick penalties, all that stuff. But yeah, these referees are human too. Like they're not robots. They do remember things back in their mind. They're also, you know, they have credibility and they have integrity. So they're not going to go out there and have vendettas, but you know, they're also human. So I understand where that be a question you might have.
I love this question. From Brett Covey goes from Hudson, Wisconsin, home of the back-to-back Wisconsin State High School state hockey championship teams in 17, 18, and 21 and 22. State of hockey, let's go. Billy G is always in win now mode, but Minnesota Wild fans and Jake Middleton, and this he's alluding to that podcast we just talked to, know the cap hell we are facing. Does Dino stay if Minnesota can't surpass the second round or even make it to the first? I mean, that was the other interesting thing about Billy's end of the year presser is he sort of created the I don't want to say excuse, but like the justification that Dean does not, that these next 2 years are going to be very difficult. And that if last year wasn't a problem that Dean didn't get past the first round and had the same ending that he did, that, you know, blowing a 2-1 lead, all that, that look, it's only going to get tougher. And so he sort of created this to me, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like he managing expectations, right? And so I think he said in there, he was, in my take from it, was he was playing the long game and having their back, right? Him doing that deflects attention away from the players and the coach. And I do think he truly believes that having two back-to-back 100-point seasons with the cap restraints that they have is not say a successful season, but it's like, it's worth, you know, he's crediting Dean for being part of that, part of building the culture, part of developing the team. So I think he is, you know, been pretty happy with Dean. That not to say that Dean's job is locked down safe forever. I think he'll be evaluated. I think every other assistant coach will be evaluated. But I think he was making that point in that postseason press conference that, hey, considering the one arm tied behind our backs, quote unquote, you know, he did a pretty good job of getting this team with all the injuries to back-to-back 100-point seasons.
Dave Turk 182 underscore asks, what surprise player in your opinions make the opening day roster this year? Damon Hunt ? Vinny Lettieri ? I mean, kind of what we discussed. I don't think anybody, unless there's injuries, I don't think anybody's got a chance to be a surprise player.
I mean
the only possibility would be starting a Merrill in the minors and putting a Damon Hunt on the team. You know, putting him on through waivers or something like that. Or Marco Rossi not making the team and then somebody from the minors making it.
But well, Lettieri making the team.
Yeah, I guess. But they don't even, like, if Kalen Addison gets more than $900,000, they can't even afford a league minimum player as 13.
Is it Lettieri like
60? I think Lettieri is 775. Yeah. But you know what I mean? I mean, they are no wiggle room. So Lettieri would be the one guy. I don't see Damon Hunt making the team unless there's injuries.
I don't think they're going to put Merrill on waivers to start the season and start in the minors. I think Hunt may be the first call if there's an injury or if there's need out there. But I don't see, barring injury, many major surprises unless somehow Rossi does not make the team.
Let's see. Who do you think has the biggest change in time on ice this year? Biggest increase, decrease?
Brock Faber.
Yeah, Faber. What do you think, what are your expectations for Faber this year? Because I thought he was sheltered a little bit in the playoffs, had a great playoff, but now he's going to be going up against McDavid and MacKinnon every night, because if he's paired with Brodin, that's who Brodin's going up against.
No, it's a big move. And I think, he's spent all the summer here preparing for it, you know, physically and mentally. And, You don't know until you get out there, but having Brodin as your partner is going to be such a huge benefit to him too. Like he can be an eraser for a lot of bad situations. I think the coaching staff is a big believer in Brock Faber. He can be a guy that could end up maybe potentially surpassing, you know, Matt Dumba in terms of, you know, total package as a defenseman. But it'll be something to watch early on. It was his first time he's played 82 games. Most rookies hit a wall at a certain point physically or mentally. So I think it'll be there might be some of that growing pains early on. But I do believe he's going to be a legit top four defenseman for this team starting this year and for many years to come. So I think who better to have him as a mentor, you know, as Jonas Brodin.
Yeah. A couple more. Garrett Pollard, up and coming star coach at Cloquet High School. Give us your predictions for both the first and second power play units on PP and PK. Guy, without the roster in front of me, it's hard. But I mean, I got to think first unit's going to be Erickson Ek, Kaprizov, Zuccarello, Boldy, and Addison. And your second one, I think, will have Hartman, Rossi, probably Goudreau,
Johansson,
Brodin, or Spurgeon. Probably Spurgeon and Johansson.
Yeah.
Am I forgetting an obvious one?
Yeah,
I mean, I know they love Foligno on it, but...
Yeah, like I think
Foligno... Like, Rossi's got to play the power play.
No, he's got to. And like, if you want a net front guy, like, you know...
You could put Hartman there.
There. Like, Maroon's played net front on power play. You've had, you know, Foligno could play net front on the power play. But I think X that guy in the top unit. So, I mean, yeah, I think those two units are pretty much spoken for, unless there's like an injury, a wrinkle here. But I think Rossi should be given a chance on the second power play.
But I will say that blank slate, you know, that Dean has given new power play coach. God, I can't believe I'm having a brain cramp. King, what's his first
name? Jason King.
There you go. He's given him a blank slate, said this is what you do. But if I was Jason King, I wouldn't touch the number one unit. The number one unit when Addison and Kaprizov was healthy and Addison was running it was good.
And Ek was playing.
Yes, like it was a good power play. Like I was listening to the end of Billy Guerin. I was in Hawaii the other day and I was listening to the end of Billy Guerin on The Fan and somebody asked about the power play being dismal last year. And like I think... That is a fallacy. Their power play for most of the year last year was top 10.
And the penalty kill even was better, made an improvement from the year before to this year. Of course, the playoffs, you didn't have Ek in the first unit, and you had Hartman playing on one leg from game one on, so it was not the same power play. But they do need to be better, obviously, when the playoffs come around.
Yeah. Which Iowa Wild player from last year, not Rossi or Beckman, has the best chance of sticking around the Wild this year. The only way this happens is are injuries, and Sammy Walker would probably be the likeliest of the guys left there.
Walker or Beckman, I guess, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see any more.
Also, to make sure to point out, too, I think you got cleared up the other day that everybody is pretty much healthy at this point, going to camp, and it's been progressing well this summer from that. So there shouldn't be, at least until there's injury somewhere else, you know, in training. Everybody's healthy as of this point, other than maybe Mason Shaw, who's still unsigned, but has been rehabbing at the team facilities. And the idea and the thought is that he'll still may potentially be a guy they can sign whenever he's healthy. I'm not sure what deal that would be, but he's clearly been around the team and been part of the promotional activities and part of the group. So I think the hope is that there's a way for him, once he rehabs from his fourth ACL surgery, that he can be part of that group.
Yep. And the Wild of pretty much, I mean, you would never know that Mason Shaw is not signed. He's doing podcasts. He's working out Tree every day. He's been around
like the ball hockey thing.
Exactly. So I mean, clearly he's still part of it, and they're you know, funding his rehab, all that stuff. King Ovehell asks, how is Ek doing with his recovery? I'm told by Bill that he's doing really well, but I'll find out from the horse's mouth Tuesday when we meet for lunch in Karlstad. Have you been to Karlstad?
I have not. I've been to like Ovik, and I've been a little further north, east of Sweden, when I went to the Global Series a few years back. But
this is going to be my first time in Sweden. It's a little 4-day trip, so I'm looking forward to that. If you have any dinner recommendations, tweet me. And Joe and I are both covering the Sweden trip in November, so I'm going to be in Sweden twice in 2 months. John says, if Maroon is so good, why is the team that knows him best paying him $200,000 to not play for them? They were in cap hell.
They needed some more cap flexibility. As you saw in their offseason, And I think the, you know, the idea for them was to get a little younger and faster. And that was their plan all along. And, you know, they were trying to cut any cap space they could. I mean, they couldn't sign Alex Killorn. They couldn't sign a few other guys. So I think they were just trying to find a way to kind of they didn't re-sign Corey Perry or Pierre-Edouard Bellemare. I think they were trying to find a way that. So and I think with the Wild, look for him, not just on the ice, but in the room and as a leader and such an instrumental voice in that group in Tampa. And I think that's what part of what they wanted, Billy wanted from him coming in here, having lost Matt Dumba and Ryan Reeves this offseason, to have some other voice in there that could be able to be bring these guys together.
This is your expertise. Terry Clavin wants to know, can you refresh on the Wild's analytics department? Still a one-man operation. It is always glaring whenever Shayna puts that out that the Wild have the least in the league. Bill is real sensitive to this fact. They just hired somebody else.
Yeah, Aaron Bogosian. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of work. Did a lot of work for them at the draft. He does a lot of interviews. Not say psychological profiles, I guess, but the mental performance thing and the questions and surveys there. And so he's kind of been part of their staff too. So they added a little bit, and I think they'll continue to and add and build. I think what Bill said to me is like, if Matt Sells tells me I need more help or I need more people, that I'll be the first one to go out there and we'll spend the money and do it. But they feel like they have a really inclusive staff, and they consider, you know, Chris O'Hearn as part of their analytics staff and what he mm-hmm. does, and other guys as part of their executive team, you know, Matt Murray, you know. So I think they see their staff as bigger than it actually is pointed out to organizational chart.
Right. But, you know, they clearly have smaller than, yeah, it's smaller than anybody else in the league. Larry, final question of the show. Have you heard of who might get to wear the A on his sweater now that Dumba is gone? I mean, I think at least I'm convinced it's going to be Eriksson Ek.
Mm-hmm.
But Brodin's always a good choice. Kaprizov's a good choice. Zuccarello's a good choice. Hartman would be a good choice, but I think that's Ek. I mean, this guy, maximum deal that you can sign any player to is 8 years, and that is because of the Parisi-Suter contracts and the last lockout, that led to the last lockout. And Eriksson Ek was the first player in Wild history and still the only player in Wild history to sign an 8-year extension. And he did it at such a, you know, he was willing to work with the team and did it at such a great price. I mean, five something. Bill Guerin deserves a medal for that contract. I mean,
Brodin's contract's and, good too. Yeah. And like, you know,
but the Eriksson Ek one, I mean, Bill Guerin, I think he says it took one phone call with Claude Lemieux. It's pretty crazy. Pretty impressive. That's how easy Eriksson Ek is to work with.
He's a heart and soul kind of player. I think he'd be a ideal choice for the A, unless you rotate it, right? Unless you rotate it, have him. Because I think Kaprizov's a guy who's obviously not just a superstar, their best player, but a guy who's people follow because of his, you know, work ethic and everything else like that. So I think by giving people a little more of that recognition could help too by spreading it around if you want to kind of alternate it around all year.
Well, thanks for listening to this special summer edition of Straight from the Source. Thanks to Joe for joining this special summer edition of Straight from the Source. Again, I'll have stuff from Sweden. Joe is going to be doing a lot of stuff on the golf beat in the next couple weeks with Matt Boldy. So definitely pay attention to that. A really cool story he's got running before the tournament and then most likely after as well. Max Boltman and Corey Praman have the NHL pipeline rankings all week this week on the Athletic Hockey Show. And then if you want to get a new subscription to the Athletic for just $2 a month for 12 months, you can visit theathletic.com/straight from the source. Again, theathletic.com/straight from the source gets you a subscription to the Athletic for just $2 a month for 12 months. My special thanks to Joe Smith, and Straight from the Source will return very, very soon.